my intent when I wrote Warrior Goddess Training was to create community, to create change in the world, not just to put a book out. And I think that's really helpful for us as authors, instead of, like, sometimes it's like, oh, I'll just put the book out and then I'm done. And that's just the beginning, right? It's like, no, you just had a baby and now you have to raise it.
Write the world-changing book that will help grow your personal brand and your business as it makes the world a better place. Welcome to the Author's Corner, hosted by Robin Colucci. Every episode, we bring you some of the most successful authors, as well as other industry experts, to share some inspiration, motivation, tactical strategy, and fun. We'll also talk about the challenges and trends in the publishing industry. Don't get stuck in the idea phase. Join the Author's Corner today. Start writing the book you've dreamed about.
Hello, and welcome back to the Author's Corner. I'm your host, Robin Colucci. And today we have with us a perennial best-selling author named Heather Ash Amara. And Heather, among other things, is celebrating the 10-year anniversary of her perennial bestseller, Warrior Goddess Training. And we will discuss her journey to authorship and how writing has informed and shaped her life, and I would argue, the lives of thousands of readers. Now, Heather Ash is the author of 9 books, including this bestseller, A Warrior Goddess Training. The 7 Secrets of Happy and Healthy Relationships is another book that she co-authored with Don Miguel Ruiz Jr. And if that name sounds familiar to you, he is the author of the world-famous 4 Agreements book. So an incredible collaboration with those two amazing authors. She has an upcoming book, Wild, Willing, and Wise. And of course, she's got many other books. You should look her up on Amazon and check them all out. But for now, let's talk about how Heather Ash is skillfully and unconditionally guides people to shift from self-judgment to discernment, victimhood to authentic vulnerability, and to shed the limiting domestication beliefs, which I love that term, this idea of limiting domestication. I think especially profound for women to consider, so that they can ground themselves in their self-intimacy, steadiness, and stillness. Heather Ash had a very interesting background. She was raised in Southeast Asia. She's traveled the world ever since she was a child and has continually been inspired by the diversity and beauty of human expression and experience. And today, Heather Ash is here to share some of that expression and experience with us. Enjoy. So, Heather Ash, welcome to the Author's Corner.
Thanks so much, Robin. So happy to be here with you.
Well, it's a pleasure and an honor to have you here. I have to say, looking at some of your other books that you've done in the past, yeah, I'm particularly intrigued with Warrior Goddess Training. And I'm realizing that this book has been out since, I think it was it like 2014 or something like that?
Yeah, we're coming up on the 10-year anniversary.
Right? And I'm just like, yeah, I needed that book to be out in 84, really. I'm like, I had to do all that on my own, and now
there's this handbook.
Now I'm finding this. So let's start there. Let's go back that far. Because what inspired you to write that book back in 2014?
Such a good question. I have always written. Like when I was 7 years old, I knew I wanted to be a writer, and was, you know, the editor of my high school newspaper. I was the editor of my college paper. Mm. But I never felt like I had enough information to write a book yet. I knew I would write one. And so Warrior Goddess Training was the second book that I wrote. The first one at the time was called The 4 Elements of Change. And after that book came out, such a funny story in a way, because my publisher called me and was like, okay, what's your next book? Mm. And I was going through a divorce. And I was like, mm-hmm. I don't have anything. Like, I am so broken right now. And he was like, that's okay. What have you written already? And so I started telling him some different things. And this book, I was like, well, I have this group of writings that I've written that are specifically for women. And he's like, that's it. Send it to me. So it was a really beautiful collaboration of something that had been really close to my heart for 20 years that I'd been working with women in person. And then to take all of that teaching and bring it into a book with such a joy.
Yeah. And I want to point out to our listeners, you've got over 5,000 five-star ratings on this book. And it's been out for 10 years and it is still in like the top 30,000 bestsellers on Amazon, all of Amazon, which is that if that's not staying power, I don't know what is.
Yeah, it's almost unheard of. Like it's such a rare book. Yeah. And the book, the day it came out, I did a lot of like promotion and calling all my friends together, but it went to number one in two categories on Amazon and stayed there for 4 years.
Oh, I believe it.
Yeah.
I believe it. I believe it. And so let's go back. So you were going through a divorce.
Challenging time personally.
Yeah. So how did the process of writing the book, do you feel like the fact that you were going through a divorce, I can't imagine it wouldn't have influenced your experience writing the book. And so would you share with our listeners a little bit about how that intersection of writing the book while going through a divorce might have influenced you as well as influenced the book?
I feel like how it influenced the book is I was in a really tender, vulnerable place in my life. And I was able to bring that tenderness and that like, oh, but also the courage to keep going. And I think that's part of what resonated with the book is it wasn't a theoretical, like, if you do these 10 steps, your life will be better. It was, I'm in the middle of this with you. Mm. And here's what has worked and here's what's working for me now as I'm going through this huge heartbreak. Mm-hmm. So it made it really real. Yeah.
And did you find it also helped you to heal as you were writing? Or how did it support you?
Yeah, absolutely. It definitely helped me to like pull together all the tools that I had learned and had been teaching and put it into one place.
And that's always so cathartic, personally, when you're writing about a tool and you're like, oh yeah, this is a good one. Okay, let's bring this back into my life again, or let's deepen into this one. So it was definitely healing on both. Yeah, lots of levels.
Yeah, I can imagine. Yeah, that's really, I just think it's wonderful when we get the opportunity to, I mean, even it probably sucked at the time, but when we get the opportunity to really put into practice what we teach in a whole new way. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that I often talk about this with people when we're talking about the possibility of writing a book, and it's hard for them to get their minds around it sometimes. So could you share with us how, like, once that book came out, how did you live with the book in the world? What did you do with the book once it was out?
Well, a part of it started before the book came out. It's just like I'm a really big community person of like, how do we bring community together? And so my intent when I wrote Warrior Goddess Training was to create community, to create change in the world, not just to put a book out. And I think that's really helpful for us as authors instead of like, sometimes it's like, oh, I'll just put the book out and then I'm done. Yeah. And that's just the beginning, right? It's like, no, you just had a baby and now you have to raise it.
Right. I'll just have this baby and now I'm done. No.
And so I literally carried copies of the book with me everywhere. Mm. I did a lot of podcasts. I talked to a lot of people. I posted on social media about it. My publisher was really amazing because I was with a small publisher. He started doing a lot of research, and this was a time like when Facebook ads were very, very effective of getting the book in front of the right audience. And so what we learned really quickly was yoga studios.
Ah, of course.
Like a lot of yoga studio. I mean, obviously goddess, people that were interested in the goddess, but we were all kind of surprised of like yoga studios. Okay. And so I started touring and going to yoga studios and doing book signings at yoga studios because those were my people.
Yeah. Well, and you know, the warrior pose.
Yes, exactly.
You get both.
Exactly.
But you know, that's a huge commitment. How many yoga studios would you say that you visited?
Oh my gosh. Probably 20.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I had a lot of friends and a lot of, so independent mm-hmm. bookstores, yoga studios. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then the other thing that was really fun is that because it was getting so much traction, the other thing that I did is we created book clubs and then a guide for people to do book clubs. So we'd send out 10 books to a group and then I would do a little, you know, like, here's your 10 books. If you want to do a book club, tell me what date and I'll come on and say hello. Oh, and so wow. uh-huh. literally I'd be on the road someplace and I'd be like, oh, it's 4 o'clock. The group in Chicago's meeting. And I would just call on my phone and be like, hi, so glad you all are meeting. I would wave to everybody. I talk a teeny bit about the book and then they would go do the book club.
Yeah. Brilliant.
It's really fun. Yeah.
And I love that strategy. That's brilliant. Mm-hmm. And that's just that personal touch. And I also love it because you could do it remotely and you didn't have to, because even going to 20 yoga studios and God knows how many independent bookstores, I mean, that's a lot. It's not cheap in terms of time or energy or money. That's a lot.
Yeah. It's a lot. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I love the physicality of being places and I'm a traveler, so it's not as hard for me. But nowadays, like, you know, there's been a lot of places where I'm supporting independent bookstores by doing workshops or book signings online as well. So if that good blend, I think that's a really wonderful thing for all of us. It's like that blend of, okay, let's play with the online and how do we create community online as well as pick three places.
Yeah, right.
to be live, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So let me ask you this, because, you know, 5,000 five-star reviews is obviously just the tip of the iceberg of how many readers you actually have. And how much promotion would you say that you did in the first year, like in terms of number of days, just to give it a ballpark?
Yeah, I would say the first 3 months for me, I was on tour, I was doing podcasts, I was reaching out and networking. And my publisher on the back end was doing Facebook ads every day. Mm.
So he did a technique where he would like just spend $10 a day and then see what got traction and then turn all of his attention to that. And I was like his third book, the boutique publisher. I was one of the first. And it's rare for a publisher to have that direct time.
Yes.
And it's different. You know, Facebook's different now than it was then.
Sure.
So we just found a way to get it in front of a lot of people.
On a fairly consistent basis. And you have to be consistent with it too, right?
Yes.
The reason I'm asking you about this is because I think that many, many authors make the mistake of thinking, oh, I promoted my book for 3 months and it's not a New York Times bestseller, so it didn't work. And they stop.
Yeah. I still promote Warrior Goddess Training. I mean, I still am out there selling and talking about it and doing social media and really with all my books. And I think you're really right that there's, and the industry promotes this, right? The industry is like, we're going to print a small amount of books. And then if it doesn't take right away, we're moving on.
Right.
And to really have a commitment to, again, you've just created a child, like be with the child and keep with it. And to let go of what success looks like, I think is critical. And to
say
be with what
that.
Is this, like, what does this being want? How does it want to be in the world? And there's something about when we think more towards how do I create, I don't know, the word that's coming to me is intimacy. How do I really find the people that are going to resonate with this book instead of how do I get this out to a million people? How do I slow down and realize this particular child that has been birthed has its own life, but it needs support to go out and do its thing.
Right.
And, you know, for me, every time I write a book or an article or anything, I'm like, if this changes one person's life, my mission is complete. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to touch one person. And that allows me to be intimate with it in a way.
I was going
like,
to say,
I'm the person that's going to get it.
Right. And I'm here. What I'm hearing you say is you're writing to one person.
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. And that's brilliant because if you're writing to everyone, you're writing to no one, right? And oddly, if you're writing to one person, you're not necessarily writing to everyone, but you're writing to every one of your ideal readers, probably, right?
Absolutely. And I literally sometimes will put a photo in front of me when I'm writing a book of like, this is who you're writing to, sweetheart, write to them.
I love that. I love that. That's a brilliant strategy. Now, does it vary book to book who you're writing
to? It does.
Yeah.
It does. Yeah. Yeah, and the last book that I wrote is so different than all my other books in that I curse in it. It's really funny. It's playful. There's a lot of deep teachings in it, but I made it more of a workbook and like a lot more bite-sized and fun. And so, yeah, a really different audience. And I did different research for it because I had to get my brain into that playfulness. And it was in the middle of the pandemic, so that wasn't easy. And I went through a wildfire in the middle of it.
Oh, does that have anything to do with different research? So, and you're speaking of Wild, Willing, and Wise, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And this book isn't even due out until the middle of next year. So does the wild in it have anything to do with the wildfires?
It didn't. It came before then, but definitely was like, and here's Wild Out of Control. This right. is an example of Wild Out of Control.
So what did spark this book for you? The one that's coming?
Sparked it.
Pardon the pun of sparking, but anyway.
Yes, no worries. The whole world has got fired. So.
Right, right.
And which is kind of ironic because this book is a water book. All the metaphors in this Wild, Willing, Wise are all about water. So I'm like, well, that's interesting. I went through a wildfire and the whole book was about water. The balance.
I like that.
I actually started through the pandemic. I actually started writing a memoir that was really intense and heavy, and it will get published one day, but it was a lot. And my business coach at the time, she's like, Heather Ash, do you really want to publish this super intimate, really difficult book right now? And does anybody really want to read this book? And I thought about it. And I'm like, probably not. Like, we need lightness. I need lightness. And so that was the spark, we can say, of me realizing, okay, what if I wrote a book that was sweet, that was generous, that was cathartic, but in a playful way.
Mm.
And it was a really good challenge to myself as well, to give mm-hmm. myself that task. So that was where that book came out. And I started with really just curiosity around the archetypes of maiden, mother, and crone.
Oh, wonderful.
Which has been part of my world for a long time. But I was like, I love those three archetypes. And that then morphed into Wild, Willing, and Wise, which was based on those archetypes, but I wanted to expand it so it was available to everybody. So it's non-gendered.
Oh, yeah. I get it now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, I just felt this really strong urge to ask you about the crone, because I feel like she is probably the least talked about archetype, perhaps. Gets the least amount of attention.
For sure. Yeah. Yeah, so for me, that's the wise archetype. Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And that's part of why I started shifting the title of the book, is that I love the word crone. I love being a crone. Yeah. I've always like felt like that energy is so yummy to me. Mm-hmm. And I'm writing about it like super enthusiastically. And my agent was like, I really hate this word crone. I really wish you wouldn't use it.
Ah, interesting.
Yes. And she's like, and all my friends feel this way. And I was like, interesting. I'm like, but that's part of why I'm writing this, is to break that stereotype. And she's like, it ain't working. I don't like the word. So we had a lot of conversations about that. But for me, that crone energy, it's about really settling into our power and mm-hmm. using our voice and having the biggest picture. You know, there's a great story. I'll share this really quickly about grandmothers and a research project that was done about why are grandmothers important. And the first reason that they thought, this woman that did this huge research project with the tribe, was that grandmas are important because they feed their grandchildren and give them extra resources. That was actually wrong. Mm-hmm. Why grandmothers are important is they feed whoever needs it in the community. Mm-hmm. They're looking at all the kids equally, of like who needs the extra love or the extra food. And so for me, that crone energy is we have enough distance. We're not just like focused on our own children or our own projects to open into the collective and say, okay, what's needed?
Mm-hmm.
We have the wisdom to share that.
Yeah. Yeah. And it is such a powerful time, I think, in a woman's life.
Yeah.
Hugely. There's so much freedom.
Right? I know. I mean, I'm entering my 60th year, so I'm, you know, feel like I'm right there. And I love it. I think it's like the sweetest time so far of my whole life.
Absolutely. Fantastic. And it's like such a secret in a way, because everyone thinks like we want youth, and then you get towards your, you know, 50s and 60s, and you're like, ah, no, we actually want this. This is the best.
This is great.
Exactly. Absolutely. So agree with you. So agree with you. Yeah.
Yeah, really. There could be a whole book on that.
Joy of Croning.
There you go. The joy of croning. I like that. Done. I'm sure your agent will hate it, but that's okay.
Exactly.
That's fabulous.
Hi there, Robin here. Have you been considering writing a thought leadership book that grows your business? How about writing a quality, standout book with a real book publishing deal behind it that not only grows your business, but also grows your influence and reach? In case you're new to the Author's Corner, my name is Robin Colucci, and I help world-class experts write world-changing books that get published. With over 30 years of experience in the publishing industry, I have helped clients write and publish books with Big Five and other top publishers. Many have gone on to become bestsellers from Amazon all the way up to the New York Times. And others have increased their business income 600 times or more as a result of their book and partnering with me and my team. If you are a top-notch expert who is ready to write your world-changing book, go schedule a free consultation call with one of my trusted team members today. We have a limited number of slots available, and we only take clients who are committed to the process and want to get their book started now. If that sounds like you, go to www.worldchangingbooks.com/application to apply for one of our exclusive spots. Once again, that link is www.worldchangingbooks.com/application. Now, back to the show.
So I know that it's going to be a while before the book is out, but what else would you like to share with us as we get excited for its arrival?
So fun. So the subtitle is When to Paddle, When to Rest, and When to Jump Naked into the River of Life.
And it's one of the things that I love doing is helping people see that there isn't like there a right way to be wild, or there's like this one way to be wise. What I look at in the book is that there's an excess of wild and there's a deficiency of wild. And then there's the balanced qualities. Mm-hmm. And so for some people, what looks like an excess to somebody else is actually the medicine they need.
Right.
And for other people, they need to like adjust in different ways. And so each of them, there's an excess of wise. You can have too much wisdom. And often people that have what I would say an excess of wisdom start thinking, well, I know everything already.
Right.
I've been, had every experience. Right. So there's that brittleness that starts to happen on the other end. Mm-hmm. And so finding the balance of what do I need to come into harmony with each of these energies, and that they're not sequential. It's not like, oh, I'm done with the wild part of my life. Now I'm going to do the move to the wise and leave the wild behind. It's like, no, bring the wild with you. It's really important.
So. Yeah. No sitting in the granny chair just because you're
right. Yes. Get up and dance as well.
That's right.
Yeah.
Get swim naked in the river. Okay.
It's swim naked in the river. Exactly. Keep jumping
in.
I love that. And the willing energy. I love this because I was trying to figure out what's that word of wild. And I wasn't sure what the inner word was in wise. And I had a friend was like, well, what's more willing than a mother? Who's more willing than a mother?
Oh,
I was like, that's
right?
It.
And as I've been writing about that quality of willingness, I just have recognized it's everything. Like, we don't need to know how, we just need to be willing.
Yes.
And so cultivating willingness, and that was a really, really fun thing to bring into the book of sustainability, how to be generative, how to stay in when things are hard, how to nurture ourselves. And that often we have that excess of willingness where we're like, how do I please everyone else? And how to come into, if you're really want to
birth and nurture something, you have to be feeding yourself as well, because you have to be sustainable.
Yeah. And I think that's especially challenging for mothers, and especially when your children are young. I remember those days, and it's a sweet time, but oh my God, like there seems to be no limit to how willing you need to be. But obviously inside of that, there has to be room for you and taking care of yourself too.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yes. Yeah. And so finding that balance of being up in the middle of the night with a vomiting child and figuring out, and how do I replenish even in the tiny little moments.
When we're talking about the warrior goddess, how much do you bring in actual goddess archetypes?
I don't very much in my public teaching.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I definitely talk about it with some of the other programs that I do. Mm-hmm. And a lot of my work within the book is really helping people understand that there's these two energies of warrior, and not even giving people an image of this is what warrior looks like, but for people to find, what is that for me? What does that feel like? What's the embodied sense of warrior? And that energy is courageous and present and focused and dedicated and really clear, that there's this pulling in kind of energy. And that the goddess energy that I talk about, the archetype of the energetic of that, is open and receptive and curious and playful, and that there's this receptivity, creative movement that usually involves other beings. I think the warrior energy is like, how do I get there, and how do I get there as quickly as possible? And the goddess energy is, how do I get there, and how do I have as much fun and play and sensuality and bring people along with the journey?
Yeah.
So I want to give people the opportunity to find what's their sense of that for themselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. So I'm looking at your lessons on the Warrior Goddess training, and which one would you like to talk about with us? Let's deep dive into one of them. Is there anyone that feels present for you that you'd like to talk about?
Yeah. One I've been working with right now is lesson 7, which is open your heart. And here's kind of fun background, is that the lessons actually go, there's the three initial lessons, like the foundations, and then they go through each of the different chakra system. So you start with the root. So
great.
It's in the background. I don't mention it anywhere, but that was my scaffolding.
Yeah, I see that now.
Yeah. So it's fun to look at it and be like, oh yeah, open your heart, speak your truth, intuition. Yeah. So anyway, so I've been really looking at this piece around open your heart, because it's really about learning how to open to both the beauty of life as well as the challenges. And that to stabilize when something happens, that we go actually towards opening rather than closure. Because for most of us, we've been trained ourselves that when something unexpected, scary, unknown happens, we close. But what happens when we close our hearts is we close our intuition, we close our creativity, we close our capacity to really feel into what's happening, and we close to ourselves. We close the love to ourselves. And so that whole rewiring of, all right, how do I start stabilizing and listening for, like, what does my heart open feel like? Like, I always start off there. Like, when you really feel open-hearted, what does it feel like? And can we let go of what's causing the open-heartedness, like my dog, and then my heart blasts open, and then just feel like, oh, my heart's blasted open. What is that like? Where is it?
Yeah.
How do I access that on my own? Because you're generating that. The dog is there and showing you how to do it. That practice then helps us actually start to open to everything.
So true. Because it's the dog, or it's the boyfriend when things are going well, or it's the ice cream sundae, the bagel with cream cheese. But it's just because I miss gluten, okay?
Exactly.
but it's not the thing. And we can self-generate that just through awareness. So that is, and that really does give you immense power to be able to navigate life when you can find that ability to tap into that feeling unconditionally.
Yes. Yeah. I've just been teaching a little bit about that, of inviting people to think of something that you love of the smell of. So roses, lavender, chocolate, fresh baked bread.
I was going to say bread. Yeah. Bread.
Fair.
All right. I'm going to let it go. I swear. No, it's okay.
You can still love the smell of bread.
Right. I can still love the smell.
You have permission. You can still love the smell of bread.
There you go.
And to bring that in and to let it open us, and then to practice smells that you don't love and how to open to them. So dog shit.
Yeah.
Baby barf. You know.
Wow. That's
cilantro.
You've
got to
be a warrior there.
You've got to be a warrior. Yeah. And so that it's such a simple way to practice, but it'll translate to everything. And the brain's like, well, why would I open to that?
But yeah.
Why would you close to it? Right. It doesn't mean you have to love the smell. Like, I'm never going to love the smell of cilantro. It ain't going to happen.
Right.
But I don't have to collapse everything. I can keep open hearted of like, some people do love cilantro.
Yeah.
Not for me. Yeah.
Yeah. That's a powerful exercise. I love that. I love that. I think I want to go get my compost pail right after this call.
Exactly. In practice, I'm open-hearted.
Open-heartedness.
Exactly.
Oh, how fun. Okay. Dare I ask to explore another? This is just too much fun. Can we explore another one?
Sure. Let's see. Lesson two, which is often people's favorite lesson, which is align with life.
Okay.
We spend a tremendous amount of time and energy fighting what's actually happening, wishing things were different, wishing we were different, wishing other people were different, and comparing ourselves to who we think we should be. And so aligning with life is recognizing life moves. It's unpredictable. It's not personal. Life does its thing. And that when we align with it, what we're saying is, this is happening. And one of my favorite teachings is about what I call the period, that when we let go of the comma and the semicolon of all the stories of, this shouldn't be happening, it's my fault, it's my mother's fault, if only I was, and all the places that we're like, comma, this is just like that experience in the past when I was so hurt. And then we start just piling all of these stories together, run-on sentences. And so the power of the moment we catch ourselves wishing things were different or blaming other people or judging ourselves or comparing ourselves or whatever we're doing, let's run on sentences, that we just put a period in and take a breath and come back to what's true now, what's happening right now. Mm-hmm. Can I come back to this moment, realign with what's happening, and then make a new choice? So that period gives us the spaciousness to show up and say, where do I want my attention to go?
So true. And it's really so much, like you said, about catching yourself, right? Because the mind just does it. It just does it, especially if it's been a pattern or a habit in the past.
We don't even realize it, how,
how
runny it is.
Exactly. I'm often stunned. And I'm like, oh, there you go again. There you go again. Okay, that's been over for 15 years now. I have one of my friends said to me, he goes, you just say, I took care of that. I took care of it.
Nice. It's okay, little brain. Thank you. I took care of it already.
Yeah. I love that. That's been really helpful.
That's beautiful. Because it's a kind of period and brings you back into the present moment. Like, that's the past, sweetheart.
I took care of it. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's been handled. Yeah.
It's been handled.
It was funny. I was oddly riding my Peloton, and one of the instructors, I think it was Alex, and he said, I love this though. He said, you got to ask yourself, he goes, you know, if you're, what's bigger on your screen right now? Is it your rear view mirror or your windshield?
Nice.
And he says, make sure you're looking through the windshield and you're not making the rear view mirror the bigger, you know? And I thought, wow, isn't that brilliant? I love that.
Brilliant. Yes. So true.
And so just say a little bit more about, you know, how this helps us to align with life in the moment, right? I know it's right there, but I'd love to have you articulate it for our listeners, because, you know, if you meditated for a long time, this is probably sounding like, oh yeah, I know that. But still, we never know it enough to not really give it its due.
Yes.
Well, here's one way that I think about that to make it really concrete and practical, super helpful, is a practice that I call the gaps practice in terms of aligning with life. And in our life, like we often think of like, well, if I could just meditate for 2 hours a day, then I would be a calm Buddhist-like person. And the truth is, if you look for the gaps in your life, and when I talk about gaps, I'm like, you're waiting in line at the grocery store, you're at the stoplight in your car, you're waiting for your coffee maker to do its thing. There are so many times throughout our day that there are these gaps. And what we often do is we fill the gaps with worry, thinking about the past, thinking about the future, making lists of all the things there's franticness in the gaps.
Mm-hmm.
And the choice we want to align with life is to come, period. I'm waiting for my coffee. Can I come into this moment and breathe and ground into my feet and open my heart and be clear about where do I want my attention? Like so much of being a warrior is understanding that there's a million things that want to hook your attention.
Yes.
And that we need to grab our own attention and choose where we want to put it. And we're losing this ability because of our phones.
Yeah.
We're getting more and more scattered.
Mm-hmm.
And so that capacity to stay, oh, wait, I want to grab my own attention and I want to bring it here. And what do we want to do with it? So it may be that you have a word that you repeat or a mantra or just breathing or a quality. I love working with qualities. Mm. It's like, I'm going to practice compassion today. How do I stand while I'm waiting for coffee and bring compassion into my being?
Beautiful.
What does that feel like? So that's just a simple practice that you'll be amazed. I know I'm always amazed when I start playing with this of like how many gaps there are.
Yeah.
And that hooking our own attention just changes everything in such a beautiful way. Simple.
Yeah. And I love that. It's really bringing meditation into your day-to-day life, really on the ground, which is the warrior right there. I mean, right.
Yes.
Is practicing in your life, which is so powerful. And it really does help you own your headspace and be more conscious and present throughout your day, which is, you know, being present when you're waiting for coffee is a powerful practice, right?
Yes. Yeah. And there's so many of us that are like excess warrior. I just talked to so many people that are like pushing and forcing and making stuff happen. And to be able to say, okay, well, as I'm waiting for my coffee, where's the goddess receptivity, play? Where's that? How do I find that in my body right now?
Right. And because it can be so easy to argue with those moments, right? Like looking at your watch and why is this taking so long? And I got to get out of here. And I need my coffee now.
I need my coffee now.
Right. And all that stuff. And it really is so powerful to be able to step back and say, okay, I'm standing here. Here, I feel my feet. I'm breathing. And it can change not only your own energy, you can change the whole atmosphere of a room, really.
Absolutely. Exactly. Yeah, exactly. And I love that. I love that showing up and bringing a quality in and knowing that I'm radiating that out. Like I'm experiencing it, but then also other people get to taste it and have a different option as well, just by me being in a different place and connection to energy is really sweet.
Oh, how yummy. Heather Ash, this has been such a yummy time together. So grateful to you for coming and speaking with us today. Before I let you go, I'm going to ask you my signature final question, which is, what have I not asked you today that you would love to answer?
Well, since this is for authors and about authors, I'll share a story. When I was in my early 20s, I went to my favorite bookstore and I was just blissed out because I was with all the books and I had a cup of tea. And I left and I got in the car and I realized I was really depressed. And I was like, what just happened? I was in my total bliss moment. And what had happened is that while I was looking at the books, this little voice in my mind said, all these books have been written already. Why do you think there's a book inside of you? It's already been written. You should just give up. There's no need for you to choke the world with another book. There's plenty of books. If I hadn't caught that, if I hadn't had enough awareness to stop and
view what had happened and see that voice and say, nope, I'm going to write a book. I may not have written a book.
Wow.
And wow. So
we all have something to share. It doesn't matter how many books there are out there. It doesn't matter how scary or vulnerable it might feel. It doesn't matter that people have written about what you've already, you know, what you think you want to write about. Your voice is needed, and don't let that judgmental voice talk you out of it.
Beautiful, beautiful advice. And so, so true. Well, Heather Ash, like I said, this has been enlightening and so much fun, so much fun. And so thank you once again for being with us on the Author's Corner.
You're so welcome. Thank you, Robin.
Thank you for tuning in to another amazing episode of The Author's Corner. You're one step closer to writing the world-changing book you've dreamed about for years. To access today's show notes and other helpful resources, simply visit our website at theauthorscorner.com. A positive review would be appreciated. Until next time.